Good evening. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge the presence of the participants of my regular Derech Hashem Shir. It's very special we should all get together tonight on the Yortzer of the Ramchal. They're spending over a year plus pondering his works. We're going to discuss, we're going to use the Derech Hashem as the prism, to be the looking glass to get a picture of the Ramchal's whole approach to everything that he wrote on. You know, the Ramchal wrote the Derech Hashem in Holland. He was in exile. He had to leave Italy because the heat was on. The rabbis of Venice came out against him. They were sure he was a charlatan. They were certain of it because he was just too good to be true. He was a very young man. Most of his Talmidim were older than him. And teaching the most esoteric parts of the Torah. And he said that he knew what he knew, and he was certain that his explanations were correct because they were revealed to him by heaven. That he claimed to have Eliyahu Navi came to learn with him, Avraham Avinu, all the neshamas of the tzaddikim, angels. We have a few of the protocols, a few of the transcripts of the things taught to him by the heavenly entities in a sefer called Shivim Tikkunim. Which is available. It's 70 drushes on the last pasuk in Torah, L'chol Yada Chazaka, and every entry mentions the entity that came from heaven to teach him, whether it was Rav Amnon Nesaba, whether it was Moshe Rabbeinu, whether it was Avraham Avinu. This was just 60 years after the whole story of Shabtai Tzvi and Nathan of Gaza. Oh, the Ramchal died in 1747, but we're talking, he died at the age of 40. Amazingly enough, he got more done in his 40 years on earth than people do in many lifetimes over. He wrote an astounding amount. We only have a fraction of what he wrote. But we're talking about the publication of his final Sforim, like the Derech Hashem and the Das Tvunis. We're talking about 1740... ish, thereabouts. He spent his last few years in Holland before immigrating to Eretz Yisrael, roughly 1745, 1746, and he died in Akko in a plague in 1747. And like I said, he was born in 1707, lived the whole 40 years, spending the last less than a decade of his life in Holland, where he he was granted a little bit more freedom, and he at least had rest from his persecutors. He had to leave Italy, like I said, because the rabbis of Venice were sure that he's a charlatan. And amongst the, in the attempts to come to a compromise with the rabbis of Venice and the other people in the background that were against him, because there was a bit of a tumult, even rabbis from Germany and from Eastern Europe had come out against them also, in an effort to calm, the uproar. He signed a written agreement that he is no longer writing the teachings that he gets from the heavenly entities. As a matter of fact, he's not going to write anything that has to do with Kabbalah whatsoever, not even in his own name. So, he kept that agreement, the agreement, but it says in that agreement that he signed that so long as he is in Chutzlar, so long as he's outside of Eretz Yisrael, that's why he wanted to get to Eretz Yisrael, there he'd be free from this oath that he took altogether. But he was, he had his hands tied as far as writing things he would have loved to written, especially transcribing the things that were revealed to him by these heavenly entities that used to reveal themselves to him. So, when in Holland, so like I said, at least over there, the neighborhood was friendly. They were nice to him. They were hospitable to him. Much of what we have from the Ramchal is from the library of the Eitz Chaim community in Amsterdam. That's where he deposited all his writings, especially, and that's where he published the things they published at the end of his life. So he kept his vow to not write any more Kabbalahs for him, but you can't hold the genius down. Right, and when under wraps, so he channeled all his genius into these books that he was allowed to write, while still in Chutz Arts, which are the Das Tvunis, the Derech Hashem, and a few other books. The Mesilas Yesharim also came out there. the most popular books that we know came out from the last few years of his life in Amsterdam. But you could see, you know, everything that he was holding back and constraining within himself shining through, bleeding through. And that's what we want to discuss. You know, Derech Hashem might have been the very last sefer that he wrote. It was definitely amongst the last. And we could see in it the capstone and the a summary of the Ramchal's whole life and his whole approach. First and foremost, like we said, he was under oath. He can't write anything Kabbalistic. So he sort of outsmarted what his opponents wanted to do. Because the beauty of the Derech Hashem is that there's not a single Kabbalistic word in it. You could go, you will, from cover to cover, you don't see the word Sfiris. You will find once, towards the end of the book, in Kavanos of Tefillah, he'll mention the four worlds, the four universes, Vatzilus, Bria, Yetzir, Asiya, and only, you know, doesn't make a big deal of it, mentions it, you know, as we go from level to level in our chakras, you know, the Karbonuses, Olam HaAsiya, Pesukei Dezimra, Olam HaYetzira, right? Kriyat Shema B'Chosei Olam HaBriya, and Shmoneh Esrei is Olam HaAtzilus. He mentioned just in the broad context of Kavanos HaTefillah, but the whole Sefer, to someone who has some type of Shaychus to Zohar and Ari, understands that the whole book is based on Kabbalah. The whole Derech Hashem is based on Kabbalah. But the genius over here is not just that, you know, he's cloaking Kabbalah in Lashon Nigla and the type of language you'd find in regular philosophy or Musar. It's a lot more than that. Because he writes elsewhere that what sets apart his way of explaining Kabbalistic concepts from others that have done the same is that he is doing a lot more than just saying an explanation. Explanation generally means reducing something to layman's terms. And a lot could get lost in the translation as you're trying to reduce into simpler terms, right? So you may lose some of the complexity in the process. Ramchal says that's not what he's doing. That's not what his neshama came down from heaven to do. He's doing a lot more than that. He said the Ari wrote in allegory. Right? The Ari's writings are all basically borrowing from the terms that we find in the Nevi'im. Right? The Nevi'im, you know, they, as it were, describe physical images that they see in their visions. And we know that this is not the case. We know that it's against our emunah. Right? The Kodesh Baruch Hu should have a body or anything like a body. Yeah, and they see a kisei, and they see, you know, Dmus Adam Ala kisei, all the things that are described in the Merkava of Yishayo and Yechezkel. So we know that these things are all mashal. The Rambam tells us that, you know, very emphatically in all his writings, right at the beginning of the Mishnah Torah. This is all mashal. These all allude to certain ideas. These allude to certain ways that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. There's no physicality in heaven whatsoever, not even by angels, certainly so by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. But, you know, these terms, you know, which have a dictionary meaning of being some type of physical image, also have a philosophical meaning above and beyond their physical meaning. And the first one to talk about this historically in an organized fashion was the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim. The whole first third of the Mor Nevuchim is a philosophical dictionary. It'll start with an entry, like regel, right? Leg. And the Rambam explains regel doesn't just mean a leg. It also means cause. To cause something. Like Vayivarech Hashem Oscha Leragli, Lavan says to Yaakovinu, I've divined, I've sensed that Hashem blessed you Leragli, right? Yaakov said to Lavan, Hashem blessed you because of me, Leragli, right? Right, then Lavan concedes, Vayivarecheni Hashem Biglal Lecha, right? But Yaakovinu says, Vayivarech Hashem Oscha Leragli, because of me. Right, so therefore, says the Rambam, I'm giving this as an example, right? Therefore, when it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'sachas raglov kamas elivnat ha-sapir, by the vision that the Kenim had at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, their version of Matan Torah, you know, the other account of Matan Torah at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, or what the Navi says, v'omdu raglov bayoma hu al harazesim, Hashem's legs will stand, as it were, on harazesim doesn't mean legs, it means causes. Hashem's going to make tremendous turns of events. He's going to cause big things to happen. As an example, right? So, you know, the Ari the way he weaved, you know, matter of fact, the Zohar also, they used the terms of the prophets, right? Because these terms, like we said, have dual meanings. They have their simple meaning that we know, their earthy, physical meaning, but they also have their metaphysical, their philosophical meaning, right? And so the Ari, and by the way, the Agaritz is also in Shas. It's all the same code. It's all the same code. They are borrowing the same code that we've had since the Nevi'im. There's a certain, you know, that these words have dual meanings. There's a secret meaning for those who are initiated. Right? So the Ari wrote all this Torah, the tremendous revelation Torah of the Ari, and he used these terms, the terms of the Zohar, the terms of the Nevi'im, the terms of the Agaritas. The Ramchal says, I came to earth to reveal what these terms mean. Right, I am giving you the bona fide glossary of terms, and it's not like I'm reducing it to human terms. No. I'm giving the definition, the real God-given definition of what these terms really mean. So it's not reducing, it's actually bringing it to a higher level of understanding. That's the Sefer Derech Hashem. Right, to a person who's uninitiated, it looks like he's saying, you know, simple philosophical ideas using simple, you know, straightforward, philosophical, logical, down-to-earth terms. To someone who knows what's going on, he is actually fulfilling his life's mission of decoding the terms of the Ari. Saying, in his words, the Ramchal's words, the Ari said moshel. He just said mesholim, metaphors. I'm saying the nimshel. I'm saying what these metaphors allude to, you know, the real meaning. You know, I've been given Rishus from Shemaim to reveal. The Ari wasn't given Rishus from Shemaim to reveal the Nimshal, only the Moshal. I've been given Rishus to reveal the Nimshal. So he's saying, speaking in down-to-earth philosophical terms, it seems that he's not writing about Kabbalah whatsoever, when the whole book is, in essence, a book of Kabbalah, and he is revealing the Nimshal of all these Mishalim. So in that way, he sort of outdid what his opponents tried to do. They tried to tie him down, and they did in a certain way that he couldn't write freely, but what he really, really wanted to do, he did do, right? And that's to give over the definitions of these terms, the nimshal of the mishalim of the Zohar and the Ari. And so that's one genius of the Derech Hashem. It's one of the things that makes it deceptively simple, is that you think he's saying very down-to-earth ideas. Anyone who knows the background that, you know, the Sefer is based on, he's saying unbelievable biurim and definitions in the Zohar and the Ari. Another thing, which is the Ramchal's genius in general, in all the works that he wrote, and like we said, Derech Hashem is one of the last things that he wrote, so he's writing now at the end of his, what in retrospect was the end of his life. He was hoping to live longer. But in retrospect, you know, what was writing at the end of his life, what his whole approach was, all his days on earth, you know, and all any discipline that he tackled, any discipline that he wrote on. He writes a long piece over there, which is the whole Hakdama to the Derech Hashem, and he says like this, you know, you want to know what meaning something has. You know, what's called that something is meaningful? You know, really, what's the definition of having meaning? That makes a difference, right? If something doesn't make a difference, it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant, it's meaningless. The meaning of something is how it changes something, that the world is different because it's there. The world would be missing it if it wouldn't be there, right? That's the meaning of something, right? That it makes a difference, it affects reality. Well, to know how something affects reality, you've got to have a certain picture of the whole, right? You've got to have a certain cosmic picture, you know, general picture of the whole, and you could see how with this thing being added, things have changed, right? And if you wouldn't have it, things would not be the same. So to understand the meaning that something has, you have to have some type of global picture. Otherwise, you don't really understand the difference that it makes. You don't really understand its true meaning. So therefore, in the first half of his introduction, he dwells on this, that we have to understand something's place in the whole to understand its true meaning, right? And he gives us six form categories to fit something in when analyzing anything. You know, an idea comes up, you have to ask yourself: is it a whole? Is it a part? Right, is it a whole in its own right, or it's a part of a greater whole? Is it a cause or is it an effect? Is it a general principle or is it a detail that belongs to general principle? I won't take responsibility for remembering all the six categories by heart, right? But it's right there. It gives you, you know, the categories that you need to analyze something, you know, that you have to ask yourself these six or seven form questions to see what's its place in the world. It's a part, it's a whole, it's a principle, it's a detail, it's a prime object, it's appendage. Right? It gives you these categories that you can use to analyze something to determine its place in the cosmos. But then he goes on to say something else, right? How can the mind wrap itself around the whole cosmos? Right? He tackles the bigger question next in his introduction. Right? How do you do it? Right? The details are infinite. What do you do? Now, this is the question that he raises very much has to do with Chag HaShavuos. Right? We say we got the Torah. Got the Torah on Shavuos. Right? Is that true? No. Right? How many? Aseres HaDibros, which by the way, it's mistranslated as Ten Commandments. Not Ten Commandments. There were ten utterances. There's about 14 mitzvahs in the Ten Commandments. 14 out of 6, 13. How did we get the Torah? What do you mean by that? So all the Rishonim, even Chazal, have dealt with this question. They say like this, because obviously we didn't get all the details of the Torah. Right? We got these 10 utterances that I say, as far as, you know, where, how many of them of the 6, 13 mitzvahs? Only 14 or so. But these 10 utterances allude to all 613 mitzvahs. We got them in code form. And all the Rishonim work on this, and, you know, there's, you know, this piyutim written for Chag HaShavuos that show, and all the different paitanim who wrote the piyutim, and all the different Rishonim have their ways of working out, Rabbeinu Bachai and the Kara Kemach, working out how the 10 utterances allude to the 613 mitzvahs. So even if we didn't get all of the mitzvahs in detail, right, what we did get is we got the principles that allude to all the mitzvahs. Because these Aseres HaDibros are merames, they allude to all the 613. As a matter of fact, the Ramchal himself says something similar in the Das Tzfunis, another book that he wrote about the same time as he wrote the Derech Hashem in Holland, like we said. Also, you know, it's a dialogue between the Neshama and the Seichel, and they're talking seemingly philosophy, but they're really talking Biurim in Arit, to someone who really knows what's going on over there. So he raises a question from the Haggadah Shel Pesach. We say something seemingly idiotic, right? Ilu kirvanu lifnei har Sinai, v'lo nasan lanu es haTorah da'ir. We've gone to har Sinai, not gone to the Torah, would have been enough. That's crazy. That's crazy. This was before, you know, the Sinai tours. There was nothing to see. There's nothing. You're going to go to Har Sinai and not get to the Torah. It's a waste of time. So Ramchal says, you know, truth is, we really didn't get the Torah at Har Sinai. The Torah was, you know, in detail. In detail, we didn't get it at Har Sinai. It was explained in detail in the course of 40 years in the desert, little by little. See, if Moshe Rabbeinu went up to the mountain and got all of the Torah in 40 days and 40 nights, it was taught to us in the course of 40 years. Many of the details were only revealed to us in Arvos Moav and in Ever Yarden. It took a while for us to learn and be aware of Kol HaTorah Kula.
But Moshe got Torah.
All right, we're going to go back to Moshe Rabbeinu in just a second. All right, but seemingly he got Moshe Kibbel Torah Misinai when he went up after Shavuos for 40 days and 40 nights. Right? So Ramchal says, look, you know, what happened at Shavuos was that we became committed to the Torah. Right? That's what called Chag Matan Torah Seinu means, that what makes us bonded to the Torah, in his words of the Ramchal, made us mitzvah v'osa. Now we're commands, like our bar mitzvah, a bar mitzvah boy on his bar mitzvah day, becomes obligated in all 613 mitzvahs, even though he has no clue what they are, sadly. I mean, really should do something about that. But, you know, you understand, right, that if we would do a good job right? But still, there's still a lot for him still to learn, but he becomes obligated in all the mitzvahs, the ones that he's aware of, the ones he's not aware of. It's called Chag Matan Tarsen because it was, in the words of the Ramchal, the bar mitzvah of Am Yisrael. We were born on Pesach. We got our bar mitzvah at Shavuos. That's why it's called Matan Torah. We became obligated in the Torah. Torah has given me the responsibility of upholding the Torah was given on Shavuos. Upholding the entirety of the Torah. And like I said, receiving those 10 utterances bonded us to the entirety of Torah, even though we're not yet aware of it. Because those 10 utterances are the klalim, the very general principles. But there's another thing. You know, the Medrash on the Pasuk. I'm not sure HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu the tablets when he finished speaking to him. So says the Medrash, right? How could a person learn Torah in 40 days and 40 nights? Torah is infinite. Right? So kichaloso, klolim, Moshe HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave over to Moshe Rabbeinu were principles. We're still working on pulling out the details from those principles ad ayom hazeh as new questions arise and there's new chidushei Torah that arise in every generation. Well, it means that Moshe Rabbeinu got kol haTorah kula in 40 days and 40 nights. It means he got all the principles, right? The details that are implicit in the principles, every generation is pulling out new details, but the details are there in the principle. In the principle, the details are there. Right. That's right. That's correct. So even that, right? Close air, protect, do care. So you know that even that doesn't mean like all the halachas that we have today. Right? Because over the generations. What?
Not just principles.
Yeah. So first of all, there might be a machlokas tanoim on this. There might be a machlokas tanoim. You know, Rabbi Shmuel doesn't hold this way. That Rashi is according to Rabbi Akiva. It might be a machlok, so that Rabbi Shmuel, we got Klolim and Sina and Proton and Arvos Moav, right? But it's not necessarily contradictory because as detailed as it was, it wasn't all the details that we constantly are pulling out throughout the generations as we're cross-referencing. But everything that we're cross-referencing and we're being mechadish by being maven dover, we talked over, inventing new halacha based on old halacha, you know that's all includes, that's all nechlau. That's all implicit in those klalim. So even what that for that generation might have been called a prat, for us is a klal. Right? So that's what the Ramchal says. You could get a picture of the whole if you zero in on the principles. If you want to go detail by detail, details are infinite. The details are still expanding. Right? The way to wrap your head around the entirety of the whole is to go for the principles. And he says, that's my shita. That's what I do in this book, Derech Hashem, and we realize that's what he did in all his books, right? That he was zeroing in on the principles, and it's an art. When you have, you know, you're bombarded with information, to be able to zero in on the central points, that if you have that point, that will give you a grasp on so many other bits of information, because you have that straight, and you have a good definition in it, you'll be able to figure out the details. Right, but it's an art to zero in on what's a principle, that if you know this, mimela, with a little bit of thinking and cross-referencing, you could figure out the rest, as opposed to, you know, going for, you know, the detail by deal, collecting nuts and bolts, as opposed to going for the engine in general. That's, you know, the Ramchal says, you know, in his book, right, Derech Hashem, not a very big book, right, Kol klale ha'emuna va'avoda, everything you need to know about emuna, everything you need to know about emuna, everything you need to know about serving God, it's all in this book. A book that in most prints is 163 pages. It's the whole thing, but it's klale ha'emuna va'avoda. It's all the principles. But he says, if you have the principles straight, you mimela have the details. Meaning, because when you encounter detail, you have a filing system to immediately fit it into. You have a framework. You have a framework that you can immediately process that information and fit it in and recognize what it belongs to. You'll know what it is when you encounter it because you have the principle that that detail belongs to straight. You know what this is like? Mishnayos. Like Mishnah. Right? So everyone knows, you know, the Mishnah is deceptively simple. But you know what a Gemara does on a Mishnah? how one small Mishnah could be many, many pages of Gemara, decoding everything that the Mishnah alluded to in one succinct sentence, but that sentence was said so sharply, such a sharp definition that it encompassed accurately many, hundreds of details. Right? That's what the Derech Hashem is. It's like Mishnayos. Right? And that's why we say Mishnayos to someone might seem deceptively simple. It's very general ideas. The Hebrew is pretty straightforward. But then when you see what a Gemara does to a Mishnah, what it sees in a Mishnah, what it pulls out of a Mishnah, so Ramchal says, that's the Derech Hashem. And he says, here, do not forego making a single inference on any one word. Because I handpicked every single word. I thought about every word. Right? Just like, we haven't seen this since Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in the Mishnah. They thought about every word, that every word would elude say, and the Gemara looks for what he was dropping hints to. Because right? It's a book of principle, and the principles are really good principles, well-defined principles, that it do indeed encompass many, many details. Ramchal said, I did it. I did it in this book. And you have to make every single inference that you possibly can, right, on every single word, because I meant it. I thought about every single word when I chose it, because I was asking how I could make a principle that adequately will capture all the details it needs to allude to, right? So now everyone talks about how the Vilna Gaon mentioned, right, that in the first 8 chapters of Mesilas Yesharim, there's not a single extra word. The Ramchal testified to the fact that in the Derech Hashem, the whole Sefer, there's not a single extra word. Right? He thought about every single word because he was trying to create succinct principles, and he had in mind how the principle will adequately allude to all the details that it's a principle of. And that way, when you encounter those details, you'll be able to immediately file it away and associate it with the principle it belongs to. And with principles, one could get a grasp of the whole. I'll just quickly remark that this is a common thread in all the Ramchal Svarim. Right? All his books are very, very concise, and yet they cover the entirety of the topic because of this tremendous talent that he had to zoom in on the principles and to say them and define them and write them up well so you don't lose any of the details that are implicit in that principle. He has a book on Gemara learning, the Derech Tvunas. Right? It's about 60 pages long, and he says in these 60 pages, every type of memra, every type of Talmudic statement or statement in the Mishnah, every single type of question or every type of answer or proof that the Talmud, it's all in this book, you know. So even if limited number of examples, it's all the examples you need, because the rest are just details. This is the way it works. He has a book on the whole field of logic, Sefer Higayon, right, where aside from the 6 categories that he lays out in Derech Hashem, he has other categories that pertain to categories you need for abstract thinking. 24 categories are the Ramchal's categories over there. And he says, this is a book that I wrote after looking at what Jewish authors wrote about logic and what, you know, secular, you know, Gentile authors wrote about logic. And the whole book is 60 pages. And it's everything you need to know about logic, because it's all the principles. No need to repeat myself. These are all the principles. These are all the types of arguments that there are. These are all the types of categories that there are. The rest is just details. If you have this straight, you'll come to the details. You'll figure them out for yourself. Or when you encounter them, you'll know how to relate to them immediately, because you have the framework that they fit into. Truth is, he has another sefer that he wrote before he was clamped down on. And that's called the Klach Pischei Chachma, the 138 Gates of Wisdom. And that's summarizing the whole Torah of the Ari in 138 entries. And he mentions over and over again that, you know, this is his unique gift. He could, in any discipline that he touches, zero in on the principles and set up the principles in their essential framework that gives you the global picture. The rest is just details, but literally just details. And when you encounter those details, there's nothing you won't understand about them because you know the principles that they all belong to. So let's give a quick survey of the book, you know, Derech Hashem, which accomplishes this amazing feat. It's a book about everything. You know, Emuna, everything you need to know about Emuna and Avoda, in his words. All right, the section 1 deals with the The Foundations of Existence. That's the topic. Yesodot HaMetziut. It's 5 chapters long. And going through the foundations, obviously the Yesod HaYesodot, in the words of the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, the foundation of all foundations is God. He created everything. He is the first existence. So the first parak is about God. Second parak is, why did he create the world? Third parak is about man, right, the construct of the human being. Fourth parak is about mitzvahs. And then the fifth parak is a succinct picture of the totem pole of reality. From the heavenly spheres all the way down to earth, and the essential steps that are in between that link it together that you have to be aware of. Right? And so in 5 chapters, he captured the basic elements of reality. So now, what's the next step? The book is in a very logical progression, right, as how he layers things out. So obviously God first, because he was the first cause. But the idea of the first section is the foundations of creation, foundations of reality. Right? What's the next thing that comes after that? Next thing that comes after that is Hashgacha, right, divine providence. And it's a very simple logical progression that the Rambam talks about in his Pirush HaMishnayos, just a very basic idea. Kol ha-pol b'ratzon, pol l'tachlis. Anyone who does something by choice has done so for a goal. If you chose to do it, you must have a goal in mind. Right? We believe that God created the world, you know, by choice. Nothing forced him. That's why the world is only 5,776 years old. Right, he wasn't always here like he's always here, because he didn't have to create the world. He took a decision to create the world. If he decided, there must be a goal. Right? So now, wouldn't it be a waste that you create something and you have a goal in mind and you don't hang around to make sure that the goal gets executed? The Rambam already posed this argument as a simple logical argument why there must be such a thing as Hashgacha. God must be supervising the world. Because if he created the world by choice, he created the world for a purpose. If he created the world for a purpose, it would be a hell of a waste to create the world and then abandon it and not be around to supervise and make sure that the purpose gets executed. Of course, you have to, it's a simple extension. If there's a purpose to creation, there's going to be hashgacha to make sure that the creation arrives at its tachlis, at the purpose for which it was created. Right, so that's why after discussing the elements of reality, to discuss how God is supervising it all, you know, to make sure that it arrives at its destiny. And in this section, the Ramchal deals succinctly with everything that we have, you know, all the terms of the events that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do in the world, right, to make sure that the purpose of all-encompassing tikkun, that everything should at the end be perfected, should be attained. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for the individual, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does sometimes on a global level for a whole nation or for humanity as a whole. Right? And this reconciles sometimes how bad things, you know, he deals with why bad things happen to good people sometimes. Because sometimes, you know, there's a difference between, you know, the role of the individual, and sometimes the individual goes down with the community. Because the way our culture sometimes runs things on a communal or a global level, you know, sometimes don't fit, doesn't stim with what's good for the individual as an individual. Aside from the fact that some individuals have to go as a kapara for their generation, or to set things right, to set the timeline right. All these mysteries of creation, of why things happen, are all tackled in that section. Now, what's very interesting is that he has a whole section, a whole chapter in that section. The fourth chapter is about Jew versus Gentile. Right? We have different destinies. Right? And so, you know, we have different roles to play in destiny. So the hashgacha on us is different. Because the Jews have a much higher, weightier destiny and responsibility in course of destiny. The Goyim have a much smaller workload and a much smaller goal to attain. And therefore, the way God supervises our affairs is different than the way he supervises their affairs. Because we have different missions, different roles to play. So all these wondrous things about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world and how he runs every nation, right, or every type of creation its way, so it could attain its perfection. And everyone's on their own track of what is their perfection, what is their role in the world. That's what he tackles in the second section of the book. The third section of the book discusses the human soul, And everything, that's how it starts off. It starts with the construct of the soul. And the construct of the soul leads into the rest of the topics of the book. I meant to say that section. Because we have a divine soul that comes from heaven. Right? So that's what enables such things as prophecy. Right? How does man communicate with God? Right? Sprint, it doesn't go like that. Right? Right, so how does prophecy work? There's a science to it. Right? When you understand that the Adam has a heavenly soul, and that soul never stopped being heavenly. It's only partially in your body. Most of it's not even in your body. The lowest part of the nefesh, as he explains over there, is in your body. Most of it is still in the heavenly spheres. That's why prophecy is possible. That's why it's possible to have and we have to believe that prophecy is possible. And that there's a exact science to prophecy. The Rambam writes about it. It's one of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. It's not a miracle. It's not a freak. There's a real explanation to it. And we have to be real with the fact that man gets prophecy from God. And this is how you can understand it. You understand what a soul is. You can understand. You could be real with the fact that it's possible for man to prophesy. It explains why you could have a dream and the dream comes true. Right? Because your soul is still in heaven. You know, just the bottom part is in your body. So that soul has interactions. You know, with heavenly bodies, right? And sometimes they give a hot tip, right? As you know, the brain is not consciously aware of those interactions, although he says there are some exceptions, that sometimes you feel, you know, a certain fear, a certain premonition of something bad's going to happen. What the Gemara says about about Chag Yischariah and Malachi, they were with Daniel when Daniel had his vision, and they felt fear, even though they weren't having the vision at the time. Right, he was having the vision. But he says, the people with me also keeled over in fear. So the Gemara says, Afagav diu lo chaze, mazle chaze, even though they weren't seeing what Daniel was seeing, their mazel saw it. So the Ramchal explains that Gemara over there in this section. Right? The neshama is still in heaven, and it's aware of heavenly interactions. So their neshamas were aware that a prophecy is going on. Right? And even if they were not, it wasn't a prophecy meant for them at the time, but they are sort of in touch with their souls, so they felt tremors, they felt fear. Right? So, but you know, when it happens when you're awake, it generally happens in a very raw way, right? Because conscious thought sometimes interferes with vibes you might get from your neshama. It's better when you're asleep. When you're asleep, so the conscious thought that might interfere with these subtle vibes is ceased. It's at rest, and that's why you have dreams, and sometimes the dreams may be true dreams. But he explains over there how you could have dreams that are totally false because you're having that dream because of, as he calls it, the heat that's rising from the dinner that didn't agree with you. Right? That's what he says, right? Amongst other causes, but he goes through. It's a very comprehensive dissertation on dreams and how it works, why some dreams come true, some dreams are false. Right? Another thing is the ability for man to effect supernatural activity, right? With divine names or lahavdil, kishuf, witchcraft. He explains how these things work, but of course it all boils down to the fact that man has these capabilities because he has an immortal soul inside of him. He is a spiritually potent being, right? That could unleash that power in certain ways, albeit he says he's very against using even divine names to make any type of supernatural activity because you're not supposed to mess the cosmic balance, supposed to leave the cosmic balance as it is, but he explains how it's possible. And it's possible only for man because he has a neshama, so he could tap into this type of power. All right, so the third section is really going into the neshama and the powers that man has as a result of it. Powers for good, powers, God forbid, for evil. And including that, like we said, including that section is everything about the occult. Right? And in the fourth section, he gets into mitzvahs. And this is an amazing thing. He left mitzvahs for the end. And he starts going through the mitzvahs in categories. The mitzvahs that we have daily, the mitzvahs that we have on the calendar, like Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos. Things like tzitzis, tefillin, and including that is kavanas hatfila, right? Also things to be mechaven when davening, which, like we said, it's all really based on the kavanas of the Ari, and he, in his brilliant way, camouflaged it, right, in Lushan Nigla, in Lushan, that language that belongs to the realm of Pshat, even though it's all based on Ari. Now, the amazing thing is he left mitzvahs for the end that tells you something, that, you know, that all this complexity that we had throughout the book, what reality is, you know, and what Hashgacha is, and what man is, right, the power of man having a soul, all that goes into why mitzvahs work. Why mitzvahs are a powerful, powerful thing. Right? They're done by a man who has a neshama, right? And you could understand how it affects reality because he laid out what reality is. You could understand how it, because we do our mitzvahs, we're affecting destiny, right? Because we understand what destiny is from the second section. Like the Ramchal wrote in his introduction, you want to really understand how something's meaningful, you got to have a picture of the whole. So we could really understand the meaning of our mitzvahs. I think a lot of people are dumbfounded what shaking a branch on Sukkot does, right? You know, what do you do? Eating matzah on Pesach, what does that do? Right, you could appreciate a little bit of how important mitzvahs are and why mitzvahs make a difference and how they shake up the cosmos, right? When you have a picture of the cosmos, which he laid out in the preceding three sections of the book. I was thinking like this, you know, the Ramchal doesn't write this anywhere. How are we doing for time?
9:15.
Okay. The Ramchal, you know, doesn't write this black and white anywhere, although he implied it, that this is a book about everything. It occurred to me, this is a thought that I've been having for years already, that the four sections of the book, it's not a coincidence that it's four sections. You know, it's, it follows a pattern that we have in the whole Torah. Whenever we find four is a whole circuit that a whole it's a whole set. It starts, you know, originally with the four letters of the divine name, Yud K Vav K, right? And then we find fourness in, let's say, on Earth. You know that already the ancients divided it up into. There are four types of existence on earth. Domain, the inanimate. Somer, the vegetable, that which grows. The chai, the animate, you know, as in the animals. And the medaber, and man who has been given the gift of speech that sets him apart from the animals. And we know the paralytis is the picture of four elements. Of course, when the ancients said four elements, they don't mean elements like our elements on a periodic table. They're talking about states of existence. Well, when the ancients said that there are four elements, there's fire, air, water, and earth, they didn't mean the fire that we know and not the air that we know. They meant states of existence, more akin to what we mean when we say solid, liquid, gas, and energy. I mean, states of existence. And if you read what they meant, it's very clear that's what they meant. They didn't think there's only four elements. You know, but I'm not... And this is all rooted in the four letters of the name, a place to look at this where, you know, there's a tremendous parallel set up to the four letters of the divine name, and that's why types of categories go in fours, right? A lot of this is in Rav Chaim Vital's Shari HaKedusha, right, amongst other svarim. So I was thinking that the structure of the Derech Hashem is no exception. That's four sections, because it says it's a book about everything. But when you really think about it, it actually fits very, very well. Right? The Yud of the name, right? We're taught. The Yud of the Shem Avaya Baruch Hu is parallels the Mida called Chachma, as in Kulam B'Chachma Asisa. The original origin of anything is the concept. Right? Kulam B'Chachma Asisa is just when God thinks of a concept, it's already made. Right? There's like, you know... The concept, you know, is the beginning of anything. You have to first conceive of it, and then it could be. Right? And that's what it really means, you know, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yehi, Vayehi, let there be, and it was. He said the concept, and from the concept, the thing emerged, right? The Chochmah is the original, you know, it's also, there's a Targum, one of the Targum says on the word Bereshis, B'Chochmasa, with Chochmah. You know, the element, it starts with Chachma. That's the emergence of existence. Kulam b'chachma asisa. It's the emergence of existence. Right? Bina, right, the second letter of the divine name, the hey. Right? Like, the, you know, you go from Yud, which is the smallest of the letters, right, to Hay, which is probably the biggest letters as far as area, right? That it, you know, represents, you know, length, width, depth, the three legs of the three legs of the Hay. Right, that the Hay represents making a whole plan, and that's what, you know, Bina is, as opposed to Chachma. Chachma is just the concept, just the concept. Bina's Maven Dover Mitoch. You start making plans. So the first section of the book is just the elements of existence. Second section is Hashgacha, the plans that God has for it. Right? But the third section of the book talks about man's soul, right? And therefore all the powers that man has as a result of that. Man's soul is what connects heaven and earth, you know, because the soul starts from the highest place in heaven and reaches the body. And that's man's function, to be a connector. A line. That's the letter Vav. Letter Vav. And that's the function of a Vav in Dikduk. Vav HaChibur. Connect things. Right? And even the word Vav itself. Vavei HaAmudim. The connectors of the pillars. The word the Vav means connector. And this, there are many, many places in the Zohar that Vav represents Adam. Right? The letter Vav, you know, is connected Yaakov Avinu. Right? That is the most Shufrei de Yaakov, main Shufrei de Arishon, the closest thing to what Adam Rishon was. You know, original prototype man is Yaakov Avinu. He took on the legacy. Mus Yaakov Chakuka, B'kisei Yaakovit. The power of man to make the connection between heaven and earth, that's the Midah of Vav, the Tiferes, that, you know, is the connector. Right? And the final section of the book, you know, is connected, the final letter of the divine name, the Hay. Right, the last letter is Kayadua Malchus, right? To be Makabo O Malchus Shemaim, right? To work for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To be Makabo is Malchus and serve him. Right? And that's what the mitzvahs are. Right? The mitzvahs are all about, you know, the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a function of being Makabo is Malchus upon us. And anyone who's a Kabbalistic inclined understands that with the mitzvahs we raise the Malchus. Right now in Golis, it's called that. Unfortunately, Malchus Shemaim is mamish in the dirt. Right, Shechinta ba'afra, the Shechina is mamish down in the earth. And we, with our mitzvahs, try to raise it up. Right, l'shem yichud kutcha brichu Shechinta. We have to reunite the Shechina, which is the Malchus Shemaim, with kutcha brichu. Because right now in Golis, it's like it's severed. We have to, with our mitzvahs, we try to raise out that mitzvahs is all about Malchus, about, you know, serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is alluded to in the final letter of the divine name, right? And that's well known that there's there are four legs to the divine throne: Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and David HaMelech. Right? Avram connected the Yud, and Yitzhak connected the Hay, and Yaakov connected the Vav, like we just said. And the final Hay is David HaMelech, the Midah of Malchus. That's the final Hay, right? And that's, you know, being Makabo Malchus Shemaim is serving God, doing our mitzvahs for Him. So I don't know, I don't think it's a coincidence today, you know, the day that the Ramchal died, and he was interested in just revealing the divine name. But this divine name, Yud-Kav, is the name that represents everything. That's why this is called Shema Etzem, like the name. Right? All the other names refer to a particular midah: Kel, Chesed, Elohim, Din. This divine name, which is called the name, it refers to everything. All the midas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world with. It's a book about everything. And maybe it's not a coincidence that Ramchal, you know, finished his work, you know, on Chaf Vav Iyar. Tonight's Chaf Vav Iyar, the 26th of Iyar, the same gematria as Yud Kei Vav Kei. Okay, any questions before we adjourn? Yes.
The rabbis wanted to quiet the Ramchal, so they said that he can't write in Europe. So what was the point if he could write in Eretz Yisrael? He went there and he wrote. Why didn't they say any place you can't write?
Yeah. I don't know. He writes a letter. He's not sure that they paid attention, that he put it into the his written commitment.
It was negotiated with this, right, Rabbanim, that they shouldn't.
That's right. You got it. Yeah. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Susa Yochen Aleinu Baruch Yisrael.